Hi everyone, welcome to the third episode of our Reading Cove podcast, where a few group members get together to talk informally about the current month's pick. If you're interested in more information about our group, or if you're interested in joining, you can visit our website at thereadingcove.com. And for March, we're chatting about Galileo's Daughter by Dava Sobel. Start introducing ourselves. I'm Millennia, the co-founder, and I'm in Florida.
I am Cheryl. I'm a co-moderator, and I am in Tucson, Arizona.
I'm Monica. I'm living in Nebraska.
And this month, we are discussing Galileo's Daughter. It is our 124th Cove pick, and we're just going to jump right in. What did you guys think about the book?
Monica, since you finished it just a little while ago, what did you think?
Well, for the most part, I thought it read like a textbook, so very little of it actually stuck in my brain. It was more like I was just reading words and then having to reread it because I really wasn't paying any attention to what I was reading. But there were parts of it, you know, I found more fascinating than others. I did like reading more about Maria Celeste. And, you know, Galileo's Daughter herself and how about her time in the convent was more fascinating to me than how he's saying that the earth rotates around the sun. I mean, there's so much of that. And yeah. It was over and over and over and over again about his theories. But, yeah, there are parts, you know, I found more fascinating, you know, the Inquisition policies and how that's done. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was odd the way they did the Inquisition, because they were speaking to him in Latin, and he was answering in Italian.
Right.
Well, the church spoke in Latin up until Vatican II.
Yeah, and in fact, well, I mean, here in Arizona, the church still does services in Latin, certain churches here. But I was really, really fascinated because it had to be translated, because this was an American author, translated from the Latin to the Italian and then the Italian to the American or English, mm-hmm. which really twisted a lot of things. And I think some things were just really off. During the read, it was difficult to read during those times.
Yeah, and I got the impression that a lot could be lost in translation. Mm-hmm. I really, because as I was saying in the group, it really felt, and just for our listeners' sake, we're assuming if you're listening to this, you've read the book or you have some interest from reading the book and hearing what we have to say about it. So that's why we're not like giving the whole synopsis of what it's about. But as I was saying to the group, I really feel like it read like it was a translation, the whole book, Galileo's Daughter. So I was surprised to find that it wasn't, because the way she wrote it, it was so awkward to me, the sentence structure and everything. And I know Chuck, I think, said that it seems like it's over scientific, like she was trying to keep it in a certain structure. But to me, it made it less accessible. I feel like this story could have been, and the featuring of the letters from his daughter, Maria Celeste, that could have been presented in a much more engaging way, coupled with all the, because his life was fascinating. Let's face it. He was a fascinating man. And the time he was living in and the discoveries he was making, coming on the heels of Nicholas Copernicus, that could have been whipped into a really interesting memoir. But this didn't read like a memoir to me. It read, like Monica said, like a textbook, like a college textbook. So I think that made it not as engaging, and you really have to have a very specific interest in Galileo Galilei to really forge through it. And the only reason I think any of us, most of us who read it, finished reading it was because it was a group pick. Otherwise, we wouldn't have read it.
Right. From my perspective, of course, I love the sciences. I love learning.
Mm-hmm.
And this book really did engage me.
Mm-hmm.
I did give it a B+ in our poll.
Mm-hmm.
The only disappointment was, you know, that Galileo was at his daughter's side when she died.
Right.
And I didn't understand why the nuns didn't give him her book, that the book he sent her, you know, that was published.
That she was translating, you mean?
No, actually, he gave her a copy of Dialogue.
Oh.
As a gift. And also her letters that she kept from him. Because I think if you had those letters, it would make more sense, because the synopsis says that it's a love story between the daughter and the father. And I didn't see that, you know.
Right.
Her writing that Galileo saved her letters, it said most illustrious father and called him sire. I'm like, did really people really talk like that?
Well, this is the times. It's different times, so it's possible.
But it just seemed very, very cold to me. You know, that she was bowing down to him. And he was also a very rich man, and because he did not marry his woman, what was her name? Marina Gamba.
Mm-hmm. Their mother.
Yeah, the girls were considered unmarriageable. So they had to go into the convent. And meanwhile, his son lived a very good life.
Because he got the Pope to legitimize.
Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly. And also Galileo was extremely rich.
He was extremely rich and extremely well respected. And I think she, as his daughter, I think we have to take into account the role of men versus women in that time as well. And her addressing him the way she did as sire, and, you know, sort of like I'm bowing at your stead type of tone to her letters. But yet there was an affection as my dad. I feel like I could hear her saying daddy. Like, she never used that word, but I could hear the feel that come through the letters.
But I mean, he also allowed them to live in squalor and you know, constantly begging for things for the convent, not for herself.
But he
actually
always sent it. He always provided.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did. And she felt guilty as well. So mm-hmm. I really didn't understand that relationship at all.
I think it's just the dynamic.
Well, they were poor clairs, so they weren't allowed to have any material good. St. Clair, she was with St. Francis of Assisi, and St. Francis of Assisi himself was very wealthy, very rich,
mm-hmm.
gave up all worldly possessions, lived off of what he could find,
and they
whether
lived
it be
by
insects or berries. And so she followed the same lifestyle and then had her cloister of nuns live the same way. So even if you did come for money, you had to give all that up.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but at the same time, the church is supposed to live in poverty as well. You know, monks and,
mm-hmm.
and people like that. And they really don't.
No, they don't.
No.
But listen to the things. I was just like, wow, when she was writing to him and explaining some of the things that were going on in the convent. Like how the monks would come in, or the priests would come to minister to them and hear confession and all of those things that they needed priests for. And if they didn't have money to pay them or food to feed them, they would be indebted to them. And then those priests would come back and take advantage of some of the nuns,
right.
like
mm-hmm.
sexual favors and all of these different types. It's like total corruption. So she was like basically begging her dad, help us, get us a new priest, because we need control here.
Yes, yes. I remember that. I was like really totally stunned by that. I was just like, oh, this poor girl. And you never understood or knew her sister either, because her
sister
was...
seemed to not want to be there. That's the impression I got. She resented having to be in the convent,
but she was also very, very weird. As far
she was
as,
troubled.
She was troubled. I honestly thought she would die first or something, because she just seemed to be that way, that, you know, her mind wasn't right. Maybe she was upset being taken away from her mother, not being legitimized, because Maria Gamba married Galileo's assistant. And Galileo told him to do so, and that's when the girls went into the convent.
Mm-hmm. I don't. Was he his assistant, or was he just a man that Galileo approved of, and then he was helping him get parts for his telescopes that he was making?
Right. He was assisting with the telescope making and everything, and continued to do so after he married Maria.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but as far as the facts are concerned, and learning about Galileo's history and his intelligence and everything, I was really, really fascinated about that.
That part, I have to say, when I first started reading it, the first few pages, I was fascinated, because it was interesting to learn about how he was making these discoveries. And, you know, because Copernicus had come up with this theory that basically the church was like saying, no way. No way. And he comes up and he's finding that, hey, this is actually true, you know? And so that part was really interesting in the beginning, but then I think the writing style of the book, the way it was put together, the letters just seemed to be just pop up here and there. And it didn't seem to have any rhyme or reason to how she was, interlacing the daughter's letters with Galileo's life. And why is it called Galileo's Daughter, like we were saying?
Yeah, well, she certainly didn't have any flow, and she did jump a lot as far as, you know, into the past and into the future. And
in
also,
the beginning, I don't think she did it so much going further into the book, but in the beginning it jumped around a lot.
It did, and it was very, very confusing if you weren't understanding, because I did read this book much slower, like a text, because you didn't want to miss something, and I was just, like, totally absorbed in it as well.
Mm-hmm.
But when you looked at the simple fact that there were royal families that were arguing about, you know, the religious beliefs in the Bible, you know, and him being convicted of heresy, I looked at the simple fact that when they were doing anatomy, Genesis was challenged, because Eve came from Adam's rib. So Adam supposedly had one less rib, but that's not true.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, it really, really, I thought it was very, very bizarre that people were challenging him. This is the royal families.
Right.
Having just like really big to-dos about this and going to the popes about, you know, him and being convicted of heresy. And his friend, he just didn't tell him properly that, you know, you're not allowed to, you know, use Copernicus in this anymore. And Galileo didn't understand that.
No, I think he did, because after, I think it was in 1616 when they had the edict that Copernicus's theory was banned and was not to ever be written about or spoken about or whatever. I think he did for years. He squashed his theories. He squashed his work with that. But then I think, what was it that happened that made him return to it? I can't remember, but something happened. And it caused him to return, like a pope, maybe one of the popes died. The pope that was reigning,
actually,
died or something.
Everyone had died. Yeah, there
and
was.
And then he went back to. Oh, I know. His sister died. Galileo's sister died. Virginia.
And that was in the beginning of the book.
Yeah, but then she went back.
It was
backwards.
So bizarre.
Then his sister died, and Maria Celeste wrote to him, giving her sympathies and everything. That's when he returned to. It's funny that she opened the book with that letter. But then she went back in history and then went, you know, came up to the point of the letter when he decided to return to his book. What was the book that he was the Assayer?
Dialogue.
No, that was later. I think it was the Assayer. And
Yes, that's right.
or is it the Starry Messenger? I don't remember.
I
But
think the Assayer was the one he wrote
the
after his
sister
sister
died.
died.
Right. So he went
Right.
back to that, which was the Copernicus theory stuff. And he
Right.
decided, I am going to, at least this is the way I understood it, he decided I'm going to write about it in a hypothetical way, in an imaginative way. So I'm not saying it's fact. I'm just sort of, that's what he cloaked it in. He cloaked it under the umbrella of just, imaginative
Right,
stuff.
because he was a devout Catholic as well,
But
and
he
he
knew what
did
he was
not.
saying was, he knew that what he was saying and what he was discovering were the facts. It was true, but he had to walk a fine line. So he decided to say, okay, this is just imagination. This is just, like make believe.
Right, but at the same time, he was stating fact, but he couldn't prove it. That
Exactly.
I think
Not
was the
yet.
essential thing.
And the church was ready to, burn him at the stake. So.
Which I couldn't believe. And also, his work was so important to him, and he had all these maladies as well.
Yes. Yeah. Because his father, you could see where his dad was very brilliant and was creative. And he grew up with that. And so when he went off to school and gravitated, instead of going into, what did his father want him to go into?
Medicine.
Medicine. He went into math and science and went
And he
from
didn't even
there.
graduate.
And I, exactly. I found that funny. He's a college dropout. How about that?
I thought it was hysterical too, because he was so many things. He was an astronomer, a scientist, a mathematical professor, and he taught all these things at Padua.
Yes.
Which was really amazing, and a philosopher as well, and he just dabbled in so many things. It was really quite fascinating
Yeah, he was
to
brilliant.
see his intellect.
He was a brilliant, brilliant mind. And that was so interesting that that's why I'm kind of, I was really disappointed that the book wasn't more engaging, wasn't written in a more engaging way. Because I feel it could have been. Absolutely.
Well, then again, the title. I mean, I really expected to see more about his daughter.
Yeah, I mean, Galileo's daughter. I still don't understand that title. And I know Joyce was saying she felt the end tied into the title or tied the title well, but
Yeah.
I don't agree with that because I mean the fact that she was buried with him, they found her bones with his, that is not in any way what this book was about.
No.
Them
Think
being
it was
together.
a marketing tool.
Yeah.
It could have
Let's
been,
sell
and
this
also.
book and we'll make it an interesting title and people will want to read it and then they it's
Well, because she died before Galileo probably wanted her buried where, he would be buried. And he was buried there, and then his last apprentice helped, and he actually died before it was carried out that he get put into the Galilee tomb.
Right.
And that's when they discovered her body as well.
Yeah,
Because
many
it
like
was
100 years later after he was
right,
buried.
which was really, really incredible to me. And yeah, it kind of tied it in, that he had that fortitude to, bury her there because he knew he would be there. And eventually, it was his last apprentice that wanted to follow up and do a biography on him, and also, made it his wish that, Galilee was put into, the Galilee tombstone or mausoleum, which was, it took over 100 years to do. Yeah, exactly. Which was really what, and I thought it was very odd too, is one of his fingers was supposedly cut off and is on view at the Galileo Museum in a glass egg. I thought, how freaking creepy is that?
Not only that, but how do we know it's his finger? I mean, come on, really?
Yeah, really. Well, I would think, maybe some arthritis or something in it, but I mean, with all his maladies, and you know, it originally started when he was caught in the caves.
Yeah, see, they went down in the, well, they weren't caught. Like, they had a spot down there, yeah.
That
and
was
they all fell asleep.
By caves and inhaled zephyr fumes.
Yes, and they almost died, and I think he's the only one who survived.
Mm-hmm.
All the other, his other friends died from the illness. From
one
inhaling.
Died like a couple of weeks later, and then the other one died a few months later.
Yeah.
But he had so many different things going on, they weren't sure if it was from malaria, plague, the zephyr fumes, and all that. Because I was trying to make a question about that, and I'm like, I can't pin this down.
Yeah.
You know?
He was just an unwell guy.
And to live to the age of 73?
Was he 73? Or 71?
Maybe 73 or 71, but, I mean, his daughter died at the age of 33.
Yeah, got sick. Yeah.
Yeah, she got the consumption, but most people died in that era at an earlier age to live. And his mother actually died in her, I think, 80s.
Wow.
Because I remember the brother complaining.
That she was a complainer.
That witch is still alive, you know?
Because she was just complaining and whining on them so much.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, he would write to his brother and say, oh, my God, she's still alive. You know, how much more do I have to take from her? You know, because he was off doing his studies or, you know, being ill.
Yeah.
So much time was wasted on his illnesses, and he would be in bed for months. I'm like, wow, what a trip. And I had thought about his daughter. She was apothecary, but she was also many other different things in the convent, which I thought was odd.
Mm-hmm.
That they switch jobs every year.
I don't know. It just seemed to me that the convent thing, I know they were illegitimate, so, and he feared for their safety because of all the enemies he had, because of his theories supporting Copernicus. And so, you know, he was really afraid for his children. So he wanted to get them into the convent earlier than the age that the convent normally accepted girls.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it just seemed to me like they were just put there. Girls just went there as something to do. You know, it just seemed like, oh, you know, we'll put you in a convent and pay them a dowry, you know, to take care of you, just somewhere for you to go.
And they did. And I was like, wow. He got them in. I believe Celeste was 14, and her sister Angelica was like 13. And they took their vows at the age of 16.
Yeah. But I don't think the second sister, Archangela, I think her name was. I don't think she really liked the life there. That's the impression I got from what Celeste was saying, that she was unhappy and then she was kind of acting kind of batty and then she got sick and she, you know, so she we don't really get much about her, but the impression was that she, you know, even towards the end when Galileo was older and, you know, took to and bedridden, really. They mentioned her. She was mentioned that she might have visited him, but there wasn't, it's like it wasn't for sure that she was around much. And she certainly wasn't there when he died. But his son was. Vincenzo was his name?
Vincenzio, yeah.
Yeah, the son.
And also Vincenzio, his last apprentice.
Yeah.
Because everybody's joking around. I answer Vincenzio to everything.
Yeah. Well, they had so many repeat names, and it's like, okay, who is this person?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Which person are they talking about?
I really could have made this quiz. Like, I could have screwed everyone.
You couldn't screw everybody because I would just pan it. I'd just be like, okay, who has the most points? Because that was just ridiculous. This really was a textbook. It's a college textbook for a classroom.
Yeah, well, I looked at some of her other. I looked her up, and after I was finished reading it, because you know our last bonus questions, you know, I always ask, you know, name another book, and I'm like, oh man, all she does write is about science and astronomy and everything, and I'm like, I don't think people want to look it up and revisit it.
Well, you know, I think The book has done well and it's won awards and stuff, so it must have an audience. And I just think it's not a book club book. You know, we did vote for it. Oh, by the way, Allie picked it. It's Allie's pick.
Right.
And we voted for it, but it's not, it turns out it's not a very good book club choice. I think it's more of
personal taste.
Not just that, but someone who's interested in the science and Galileo. It's a niche type of reading.
Right. And well, Allie has some pretty diverse interests and everything too, because she's a nurse and everything too.
So, yeah, one of the books she had given us to vote for was, I remember, was The Egyptologist as well. That one sounded pretty good. But we voted for Galileo's Daughter.
Yeah.
So, but it turns out it wasn't the best book club choice.
No, and neither was last month's either, but...
Flesh and Fire.
Oh, man.
Well, hey, there were a few people who liked Flesh and Fire.
Yes,
Monica
you
liked
did.
It.
A lot of people, you know, kind of enjoyed it, but then again...
That was a better book club book than this.
Yeah, but most people, I think, finished this one, didn't they?
Well, that's yet
no,
to be seen. Kim
there was
did
a lot
it.
Of people that said, I'm no.
Yeah. Kim didn't finish. Brenda didn't finish. And I'm sure there are others. I think Robin didn't finish.
Nancy didn't finish it. Haven't heard from Allie.
Nancy didn't get it. I don't think she got the book yet. She was, or I don't remember what she said, but she said something.
She got it and she's not crazy about it, but I just received her test too, her quiz.
Okay. And then so, Allie, I don't remember if Allie said anything about reading it yet.
Allie hasn't posted it in over a week, so I was curious about, you know, whether
Well, I'm sure it's her pick, so I'm sure
it.
Yeah, I'm sure
yeah,
she's
I'm hoping,
reading it.
Oh yeah, it came off her TBR pile, right?
Yeah.
Because we asked people to pick them off their piles.
No, yeah, I think it definitely was in her on her shelf, so I'm sure she's reading it. But there were several people who chucked it, and I can understand it because it does read like a textbook, and it's a long book. So if you're not, like yourself, fascinated by it, then you're going to be just bored. Because I had to just take it like 50 pages a day, and then I was skimming a lot of the boring, the glazed eyes glazing over sections. I was just kind of just, I did turn every page, but I skimmed a lot.
Right. Melina, you had the book, the actual book, because the last, I think it would be 75 pages was like explaining facts.
The
explaining
part that,
Scooties,
the, part
the
that
monetary.
Starts with In Galileo's Time.
Right.
Yeah, that's on page 369.
369 in my book, too.
369 to 398.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's 40 pages shorter.
Yeah, but it's still 368 pages of textbook.
Right.
For the most part. I mean, aside from her letters, you know, I did read all her letters, and it tripped me out when she was talking about the laundry and doing his Galileo's collars. She was a very good daughter, and she was looking after her dad from behind the walls.
And
the
linen and everything. I really couldn't believe all that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow. And, you know, she's like, how can I get by with only 6 hours of sleep? And, you know, she's doing all this stuff, and I'm like, wow.
Yeah, and then he said, you know, she wasn't taking care of herself, and that's how come she was susceptible to the dysentery. Because that's what got her at the end was, you know, she died of dysentery. So
She ate. But, I mean, the sister also did. That's why she ended up giving up her room. So the
Who
sister,
did?
Marie Celeste.
Oh, yeah, in the beginning.
She gave up her room because the sister had gotten sick.
And then she
was living in a dormitory type area.
And then she begged him.
She was living in someone else's room on the floor.
And then she asked him to give her the money to buy it, to rent a room.
Right.
Another room.
It still took another 2 or 3 years before she got a room.
Yeah. But she did ultimately get it.
Right.
When that other nun, I think the other nun passed away or something.
Yeah. And I thought it was really, she actually committed suicide too.
Really?
She committed suicide.
Yeah, that
one of them did. She like stabbed herself like 13 times in the throat and abdomen.
Yeah, and she also had done something right before that too.
Like smashed her face into the ground.
Yeah.
That's right. Yes, because you just finished it. Yes, she did. She made herself fall and completely wrecked her face and then took a blade, some
and
type of
stabbed herself.
Pocket knife and stabbed herself 13 times, but a lot in the throat and the neck.
And finally bled to death.
Right, but it took a while.
Yes, it took. I was like, my gosh, this convent, this book should have really been about Galileo's daughter, because the things that were going on in that convent.
And see, that's the part I read, kind of paid more attention to is the since I'm Catholic, I understood a lot more the Catholic history and was familiar with those parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
But even still, we spent sophomore year in high school learning about the church history, and it was so boring.
Also, what really amazed me too, and I could have screwed everybody with this one, was when the
she wants to screw everybody started,
when the clock started, the hour of the day. Do you guys remember that?
No, I must have skimmed that part.
In Italy, mm-hmm. the clock started at 12 p.m. So that would be hour one when you're on the, the military time,
mm-hmm.
the 2400. So if she was talking about the seventh hour, it would be, in the evening.
I know she would say, I've got to stop writing now because it's the third hour of the night. I don't know what she was talking about.
Right.
What time she was talking about. Is that 3 a.m.? And then again, time is very subjective. The clock was established by people. So
right.
When your time starts in whatever part of the earth, it was all established by, I don't know if it was Rome, in ancient Rome, or Greece, but, it was established by someone.
Right. And also, the calendar was made with the moons,
mm-hmm.
And also to mark, the month and the day,
mm-hmm.
and basically also to mark Easter,
mm-hmm.
which I found really, really, interesting, especially since he was an astronomer. And when Jesus was born, he supposedly, when the stars were in the sky that led the three wise men
mm-hmm.
to Jesus, he was actually born in July.
Mm.
And I believe only one country, I think it's Brazil, that celebrates Jesus' birth in July because of the astronomy.
Yeah, well, there's always big debates about the calendar, and because it's subjective, and there's debates about the Roman Church, the Catholic Church, ancient Rome, and when they made all of these decisions and how they came to make them. So,
but the calendar definitely was used. Well, the moons were definitely used to establish the calendar and to just establish Easter or the beginning of Lent,
and that's religious.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
So it's subjective,
Yeah.
It was created out of the religious doctrine.
Right. And they still use that today.
Well, we still use it today, of course. But
yeah.
there are people who don't observe that,
Right.
So, mm-hmm. all right. So let's wrap it up now. And are there any other comments or scenes or sections you want to?
Well, I noticed
there?
One part, they were talking about the rosary, and it said something about 70-some Hail Marys, and I'm thinking, did the rosary change because there's 53 Hail Marys on the Catholic rosary?
Really?
You have the five decades, and there's 10 on the each decade, you'd say 10 Hail Marys, so that's 50, and then you say three at the beginning. It starts off with either the Apostles' Creed or the Nicene Creed, and they're both similar but different.
Mm-hmm.
And then an Our Father, the three Hail Marys, a Glory Be, and then you just do the Our Father, 10 Hail Marys, Glory Be's five times, and then finish up with the Hail Holy Queen.
Oh,
so I'm thinking, where is she getting 70-some Hail Marys? It's not there. So I don't know if maybe it changed since then, or she just has her Catholic facts
wrong. Maybe. Could be.
No, it probably was right, and during the centuries it probably changed a little bit. What bringing that up, what really made me think was how Galileo was sentenced to do penance, and he had to recite all the Psalms once a week. And
he was lucky.
Yeah, his daughter decided to do that for him just
Yeah.
in case he wasn't, because it was supposed to be done in private, once a week at a certain time, you know. And I just thought that was really, really wild.
Yeah, the church killed Joan of Arc. I mean, they kill people, they beat people. So he was lucky. And
Yes, he was.
yeah, he was, I think, 70 when he got sentenced, so it wasn't.
Well, the Pope didn't really, the Pope and the Church didn't really find him or committed him to heresy. It was cardinals. It wasn't actually word from the Pope to do that.
Yeah, then I
No,
think,
but
and
it
so
was Pope. It
it was
was
kind of
Pope.
technical.
It was Pope Urban who was out for his head, because people,
Right.
the cardinals, were pressuring him, and for some reason he went on this. Suddenly, it's like the image of the church had to be maintained against
Right.
this threat. That's what these cardinals were making him feel. So that's what really led to this, the trial of Galileo on that book, because at first he got all the permissions he needed to publish the book. Which book was it?
It was for dialogue, and Pope Urban did say, yes, you can do it. That's why Pope Urban wasn't in any of his trials or questioning. So,
Pope Urban was the one that told him as long as he kept it quote unquote hypothetical, he
which he
could write
did.
it.
But then he
Right.
is also the Pope who pushed for his arrest and pushed for this trial and put,
That's
you know.
because royal families were coming to him about that.
Exactly. So
Yeah.
that's what
So
I'm
he the
saying.
church didn't actually commit him of heresy.
But
It
they
was
would
just
have.
a group of cardinals who did it because Pope Urban approved it, and Pope Urban was also a friend.
But he wasn't acting, what I was reading, he wasn't behaving as a friend. He was the driving force behind the trial. He could have
Right.
stopped it if he wanted.
Because he was undermined.
Yes,
Yes.
and they were even asking when Galileo's sentencing, he was sentenced to stay in the embassy. And, you know, when friends of Galileo would appeal to the Pope to let him go home, he said no.
Yeah.
And they didn't let him go until, you know, like long after he was into his sentence. So that
Right.
Pope turned on him because of the influences of the royals and the cardinals and, you know,
Well,
whatever.
he was disrespected, yes, exactly. And he had to show that to keep his respect amongst the families, amongst the royal families, and to keep his power. Because he was very vain, and he after this, he put a lot of his family members into high positions as well, as cardinals and whatnot. So I was really amazed about the politics of the church as well.
Yeah, exactly. And the strength of beliefs. When people have certain beliefs and their identity is rooted in them, it's scary because this is what it leads to.
Well, Galileo was also asked to recite and promise certain things at the heresy trial, and he would not recite a couple of things because he was such a devout Catholic. And
But
he's like, no.
he did capitulate to them and say that he did not believe, you know, he completely renounced the
Right.
idea that the sun was the center of the universe because his life depended on it.
Right, but he also, because he was such a devout Catholic, they did allow him to take two things out of that. I forget which it was, but I was really surprised because he looked, I cannot say this, but I will, you know. And the cardinals allowed him to take those two items out. So it was very, very interesting because it really wasn't the church who did it, it was the cardinals. And it was because of Pope. What was his name again? Urban.
Urban.
Urban. Just telling him, you know, I was disrespected, and the royal families are upset, and we have to do something and make an example of him.
Well,
And again, like Monica said, he got off lucky.
my closing thoughts are there were a few. I find Galileo Galilei fascinating as a man, and of course, his discoveries. He was brilliant, a brilliant mind. And there were a few quotes of his in the book that that I highlighted. Things that he said. He had a very, he seemed to be really insightful spiritually and was definitely ahead of, you know, the people of his time. And so for that, I can say I enjoyed that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my closing thoughts.
How about you, Monica?
I enjoyed more, I guess, the life in the convent, learning about his daughter's life. And so I, you know, paid attention to the girl that killed herself, and even the history of St. Clair.
Yeah.
That was interesting, too. But she jumped. Because she went back in time so much as well. The only thing that I really, really enjoyed was all the knowledge that Galileo had, as well as being ahead of his time, and the conflictions between the church and his discoveries. I thought that was really a fascinating read as far as that's concerned.
Okay, so thank you everyone for listening. And we hope you've enjoyed our talk about Galileo's Daughter by Dava Sobel. And stay tuned for next month's episode, where we will be discussing The Help by Catherine Stockett, which should be a really, really good read. I'm looking forward to it.
I am too. It's a great book.
Really? I can't wait to read it.
You'll love it.
Okay, bye everyone.
Goodbye.